Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Dimension Data. Now, I'm pleased to welcome two senior executives from Dimension Data. First up, we have Dr. Setumo Mohapi. Setumo is Chief Go-to-Market Officer at Dimension Data, and he is, of course, a former CEO of the state IT agency and as well of broadcasting company Sentech. Setumo, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
He is joined today by Kyle Stanton, and Kyle is an Intelligent Infrastructure Executive at Dimension Data. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you.
Great. So, well, Setumo, let me start with you. Let's get things kicked off today. Dimension Data has been through a major restructuring in the last few months. The organization has a flatter structure than it had in the past, and it's actually done away with some of its long-established brands in favor of the Dimension Data brand. Maybe take us through the changes that have been made, why they were made, and the impact they're having on the organization.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I suppose let me probably even just step back into a bit of history. Dimension Data, I mean, started as a kind of an SI business. Largely on the back of being a technology partner, perhaps even a distributor around the Cisco portfolio of things. Later on, of course, Internet Solutions was then set up in the mid-90s, and then Dimension Data set up what we'd call today a VPN company.
That was Omnilink.
Yes. And they acquired IS. IS was an ISP, and then kind of put the VPN company together with the ISP to create what was then really a new offer. So the SI business and the kind of the networking business moved along. And interestingly enough, at the time, within the SI business, one of the network services that were provided was a managed network service. Because the SI business is really an enterprise business, right? And then here you have a network business. And then, of course, later on we bought Bright House. And all of these brands were operating independently. And it was fine then. But, I hate to use this word, but convergence happens in many ways. Businesses kind of converge in terms of their business models. And our clients started asking for something different, a one-stop shop for their IT services. Clients want one or two of their suppliers to be their partners in terms of thought leadership across the stack. And there are many, many other things that also happened there. We started realizing that the boundaries, for example, that kind of existed between the enterprise networks and then the WAN networks became almost artificial boundaries because clients started looking for kind of end-to-end solutions. The boundaries that existed between, hosting, again, between hosted services, private hosted services on-prem, and then later on when public clouds come in, again became kind of artificial because our clients look for hybrid and also multi-cloud services. And it didn't take long for us to realize that, in fact, we could provide a unique proposition by combining all our strengths and not along the brands, but along value chains. And as a result of that, actually, we could take out a lot of inefficiencies as well. We could create more relevant product sets. And have more enduring conversations with our clients, and that's kind of the reason why we did this. It's painful. Some of these brands have been here for a long time. I used to work for IS almost 15 years ago. It's just always been in my heart, for me to come here and be one of the drivers of the merger and even the retirement of IS. It's not been an easy thing, but it's a necessary thing to happen. What is the results of that? I must say that what we thought was going to happen, we actually got more than that. We went through a fairly difficult process around efficiencies, obviously we had to release quite a large number of people. We have a kind of a new company, which is a 1DD company. And it's a very, very dynamic company with a kind of a new energy. That's one side from an employee perspective. On the client perspective, I mean, some of our, particularly our top clients that have been buying from us across the different brands, who are now can see, who can now see different types of integration, integration on the back end, integration in terms of products, and also integration in terms of our client services. The response has been more than positive, and it's a very refreshing thing, and I must say fairly. I mean, once I've been in the industry for quite some time, and I think what we have is a very unique proposition in the marketplace. Most importantly, we are now able to really create unique products and create them very quickly in the for the marketplace.
Okay, and I imagine your clients are like the fact that there's one dimension data to deal with, and not multiple companies that they, which weren't necessarily talking to each other, right?
Perhaps not. And I mean, our clients would, I mean, could pick it up as well. I mean, you could easily, because of the way these businesses were set up, have two people from this dimension data under the two different brands, kind of proposing two different solutions to a problem, and in a sense, kind of competing with each other. And our clients would ask us and say, but why do I have two people from your company actually telling me things that are different ways of solving different problems? What do, I mean, obviously the problem there would be that you kind of carried a, we would have people carrying solutions, looking for problems, and not looking at problems, and then finding the best kind of integrated solution for those environments. So our clients are very relieved that, in fact, they have a single point of contact into the group. And the group, there's no conflicts. Before, for example, I don't have a problem dealing with a client where I can talk about on-prem kind of a hosting, private hosting in the kind of old ISNs, or public hosting. I can easily provide a hybrid kind of a cloud solution without thinking that, you know, I'm not going to get, or without feeling conflict as a dimension data employee.
Right. So we're doing this, we're recording this podcast today in person. We're at level two of the lockdown. We do have some perspex between us to keep us safe. But it's good to good to be out again and not working from home. But so Tuma, let's talk a little bit about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown. Do you think this lockdown and what's happened over the last 5 to 6 months has changed the way that companies approach IT? Has there been a fundamental and permanent shift, especially when it comes to conversations around digital transformation and digital readiness?
Absolutely. And in fact, I'll give you a couple of some of my observations, I mean, just across the board. And some of it, I mean, I really talked to even our new business model. There were companies that were on the initial stages of their digital transformation journeys, meaning that they had to perhaps do some investments or maybe even affect some of their assets, you know, retire some assets, perhaps move some of their workloads into the public clouds. We've seen some of those kind of make some decisions, maybe postpone some of those decisions, so maybe to preserve cash and so on and so forth. And then we've seen companies that were, had not yet made that jump. So they were kind of in the, their purchasing models were more CAPEX purchasing models from that point of view. Again, we've seen some of them kind of postpone some of those decisions and maybe shred their assets a little bit more. The flip side of that, of shredding their assets, of course, is that they need more kind of services, or the requirements for kind of back-end services become more pronounced. And the requirements for integrated services across the stack, whether it's application hosting and so on and so forth, become even more pronounced. We've seen companies that were already on the journey towards that, as part of their digital transformation. And some of them have accelerated those in different ways, though. So the journey to cloud would have been through migration and then managed services on a kind of on a over 5-year period. And some of them have kind of started saying, look, here is the other 80% of my workload that I was going to move to the cloud. Perhaps I should move it faster. But this time around, the way they interact with the market is quite different, because these workloads are now quite mission critical. That's another thing. So the, and then of course we have seen on the enterprise side as well, we've seen the way they, I mean, the employee experience, how the employees kind of interact with themselves, interact with the organizations, interact with each other, becomes different, of course. We were all forced to continue work from home. And as a result, the impetus for digital transformation within enterprises increased quite significantly. Okay. I mean, if you were on an environment where you were going to transform, for example, your workplace, internal workplace, all of a sudden you go outside, and all of a sudden things like your security systems become more pronounced. Mm-hmm. And now we see a lot more people becoming more security aware. I must say that the digital transformation journeys, I mean, they happen in two stages at least. They happen at an infrastructure level, mm-hmm. Which would be to lay the foundation, and then they happen at a kind of at an application level, which then affects kind of the entire business. We are still, in my view, most companies and most organizations are still at the point of transforming the almost the infrastructure level. Mm-hmm. But one is seeing a little bit more pressure from the top as well, from the application environment. Yeah.
So if there is more pressure to do these sort of projects, given COVID,
yeah.
How much can they be accelerated? I mean, is there a danger that companies are going to jump into these projects and they're going to tell their IT departments, you must get this done in a matter of months instead of the years they've been planning to do it before? Is there a risk then that mistakes are going to be made, that companies are going to rush too quickly into these things?
No, not really. I mean, I think what I've seen is that there is a bit of urgency to move. I mean, remember part of the business case of kind of a digital transformation journey is also the overall value for money that you get. I mean, so my business is operating the same way. Perhaps I have a little bit more pressure on my top line, and I want to keep my bottom line as much as safe as possible. So how do I get more efficiencies within my operations? And the reality is that the economy has shrunk. So businesses, their top lines are under pressure, and therefore, I mean, you have no choice but to work on your operations. But my observation now is, I hinted at the fact that the approach to the market now changes, because initially, companies and the space really could have been for your digital youngsters, those companies that were born in the cloud. But right now, because of the risks that are there, you now start asking into environment some of the, you want a little bit more stability, you want a little bit somebody who can provide you with that comfort that in fact they can manage your mission critical estate, so that you can still transform digitally, but you do it at much lower risk. Yeah. So, I mean, and it's a good balance, I think. I mean, for people like us, it allows us to use our new operating model of integrated services, digital at heart. We're a big company, and we're probably a safe pair of hands. So it does create a space for such entities working side by side, of course, with the small companies that were kind of born in the cloud as well.
Thank you. Well, the reason we're here today, the reason I have you both in front of me, is to talk about Dimension Data's smart virtual workplace solutions, which have specifically been tailored to help companies navigate the challenges of a remote workforce and all that entails. Carl, I think let me bring you in here. Maybe if you don't mind, just spend a few minutes going through the smart virtual workplace solutions that Dimension Data offers and what companies need to know about it.
Sure, thanks. So the smart virtual workplace solution is really about assisting our customers with the challenges that they face. You spoke about the distributed workforce. It's about the new normal. It's about the new ways of work. We speak about uninterrupted connectedness, and when we speak about that, we look into the environments and we try to add some sort of context to the challenges that our customers face. When the president announced lockdown in March, not many of us, specifically if we look at our clients and IT organizations, were prepared, some more prepared than others. But the reality is that there's a number of unknowns. We have, we're one of the fortunate countries in Africa that has an abundance of connectivity, an abundance of technology, but there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach in the market that can cater for the complexity that our clients are facing. So the solution's really made up of two components. It's the infrastructure components and the application components. And the one concept that we've looked at when we look at both infrastructure and application is secure by design. One of the major driving forces outside of the fact that you need to ensure your workforce is productive and you can ultimately keep the continuity from a business perspective going. There's risk that's been introduced in the distributed workforce. You're four times more likely, one of the stats that we've become aware of, is you're four times more likely to have a cybersecurity breach in the context of the distributed workforce than what you would be in the context of a campus or corporate environment.
Four times.
Wow. Because cybersecurity, as much as it's a digital control, there's physical controls. Mm-hmm. Someone walking into your house, you know, putting a USB in your in your laptop, you know, getting access to information, whether it's stealing the information or just viewing information. And then, you know, there's the personal aspects. What are your children and family doing on the network that you don't have in the corporate environment? So one of the, like I said, one of the major drivers is really the security and risk component. But infrastructure, as much as it's available in the country, I mentioned there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach. And connectivity is one of the major challenges. Mm-hmm. Over the last 3 months, we've seen, maybe lucky for us, the utilization of broadband services skyrocketing. And if you misuse certain mobility services in the wrong context, you know, some of them are designed for coffee shops, one-hour meetings, going to visit a customer. Now you're not in an always-on environment. And for financial managers, business owners, it's a nightmare because the cost of connectivity can really be prohibitive. We're uniquely positioned with our consumer and enterprise capabilities, and we've bundled an infrastructure connectivity product that can, you know, deliver connectivity at the right quality, at the right price, at any location. I say we're uniquely positioned. You might know that as part of the group, we have MWeb, which is the consumer division, yes. And then we've spoken about old IS, but intelligent infrastructure is a powerful component of what we're delivering here. So can we deliver connectivity that ultimately enables the digital experience and the transformation we all speak about? We have other unique components in this country, load shedding, and again, intelligent infrastructure. We have the capability to assist you in mitigating and ensuring you have that uninterrupted connectedness. And a very basic solution, but as part of the smart virtual workplace, you can take an inverter that will power your work devices and ensure that whatever function you're in, whatever persona you are within your organization, if you're important, we can mitigate the fact that you might not have power. And then the third component I mentioned was the security. So at a base level, deploying infrastructure that can separate the personal aspects and the corporate aspects. Mm-hmm. What we've noticed is that, you know, as much as everything's in the cloud, putting down physical devices that can secure the environment and give us visibility and we can monitor has improved experiences for the applications, but also the experiences for employees from a collaboration perspective and the services or whatever the engagements you're having with customers. So the three components, just to touch on them again, it's the connectivity, it's the power, and then the basic level of security. And that's the enabler for us, that's the foundational aspects. We believe if you get that right, the application component around collaboration, whether that's internal collaboration or external collaboration, or the way that we deliver applications, whether that's a remote desktop solution. And then, again, the most important aspect is how can we secure that environment? The foundational aspects of infrastructure allow you to do that. Mm-hmm. And what we're quite proud of is that we responded quickly to market, but we also feel that we've put a commercial offer on the table to customers that makes sense for them. If you look at the long-term aspects, which I guess we can touch on now, I'll get into at a later stage, these solutions are going to change the way that you look at your business. They're going to change your cost structures. They're going to change your business model. But we do believe that by, you know, changing the lens, looking at it slightly differently, you can fundamentally transform your business, drive massive efficiencies in the short term, medium term, long term. And there's softer benefits that related to your workforce and customers that will improve your overall performance as an organization. So that's Smart Virtual Workplace. And yeah.
So do you see this current situation that we're in continuing? At least sort of a hybrid type approach where some people continue to work from home or people work from home from time to time. Perhaps there's a second wave of COVID and more people are moved out of the office environment into the home environment. Do you think that the nature of the office work environment has changed forever as a result of this pandemic?
Yes, it has changed forever, definitely. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will stay as it is today. Lockdown has its cons, as we all know.
Yeah.
But maybe the hybrid workplace is what we're going to see. We also can't take for granted in Africa and in other countries, not everyone can work from home.
Yeah.
And the organizations need to be well aware of that and mustn't just assume that it's fit for purpose and, again, the one-size-fits-all solution. You're seeing the rise of thing called a concept of microspaces, so almost like an edge office in a way. Mm-hmm. Can you take the office closer to your workforce when appropriate? Mm-hmm. But the overall workplace strategy is having a massive implication on business continuity planning. Previously, large enterprise organizations had to spend money on secondary locations. Should something go wrong, where do I ship my workforce to? Mm-hmm. Today, in the distributed workforce, you don't need to worry about that. It almost becomes the other way around. What happens if someone can't work at home? Can we send them back to the office?
Yeah.
But it's not a one-size-fits-all. One of the things that we're recommending is we assist you with the understanding of the workforce aspects, the client aspects, your digital aspects as an organization. We can assist all clients with that as we learn through the process and we walk the journey with many organizations. But there's a number of considerations you have to take, and you will end up with a hybrid solution that fits your business, fits your customers, and the workforce.
So, Tumo, let me bring you back in here.
Sure.
I'm frequently amazed, actually, how quickly some big companies in South Africa were able to transition to remote work. And I'm thinking particularly of big consumer-facing organizations like banks and telecommunications operators that were almost overnight able to take their call centers, for example, and shift their call centers into a work-from-home environment. To a large extent, as a consumer, it seemed to work, and it seems to have worked quite well. I'm sure there were a lot of difficulties behind the scenes that we're not aware of, but some of these mega corporations have moved their call centers into the home environment. Do you think that some companies were simply more prepared than others for remote work, and does it come easier to some sectors like IT, for example, or financial services?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, let's take probably financial services. You hear it directly from the leadership there. You know, I just take the unfortunate closure of branches, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the underlying concept there? The underlying concept, you know, I always say that when a branch closes, what happens to the connection between where does the connection between the bank and the clients of the bank go? Where does the branch go? In fact, the branch gets distributed.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a distributed branch, and it goes perhaps into the app.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a bank who closes a branch, continues supporting its clients, and the method of doing that is through remote interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start doing that at that level, probably internally in a very 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 complex environment, you have prepared yourself to do CX remotely.
Mm.
And perhaps, if you have laid the foundation to do remote CX or remote client management, you should be able then to do remote EX, because you have nailed the security. I mean, we are connecting with our banks through open internet. It has to be secure. It has to be secure for me. I have to feel secure. It has to be reliable, and it has to support the business, right? Mm-hmm. And before that, remember, I could only guarantee that by going into a physical bricks and mortar kind of environment with a massive lease line going from that branch into a massive data center. So, I mean, the foundation to make that happen is absolutely no different to the foundation to make the employee then to interact with the rest of that business infrastructure away from home.
Carl, before we started recording today, we had a very brief discussion about the impact of the lockdown and work from home measures on productivity. I've spoken to a number of executives over the last few months who told me that they felt that having employees working from home would not be good for productivity because you know, there's no one to watch them. They could be watching Netflix instead of working, for example. And I'm sure a lot of this goes on. But those executives that I spoke to also expressed surprise that, anecdotally at least, people seem to be working harder now, mm-hmm. and that productivity may be going up during this period, at least for the moment. Is that what you're seeing as well as Dimension Data? What's your take on the impact on productivity of this lockdown?
I think in certain cases it's gone up massively. Mm-hmm. Many organizations speak of the concept of inclusivity, and I can imagine being a low-cost earner or a single mom and having the ability to, or a single parent, should I say, having the ability to now work from home and balance the family demands. And I guess the level of appreciation you could have for your organization that, you know, they allow me to do this and mm-hmm. they consider that I've got context at home or in my specific scenario that's different to someone else, and you're catering for that. You speak about the low-cost employee. Maybe you earn 5,000 Rand a month and you spend 1,000 Rand a month on transport, mm-hmm. but you get to your work environment. If your organization's provided a solution for you to work from home, you're probably more effective just from the fact that you don't have to travel 2 hours or an hour to work and mm-hmm. back, things like that. Some people just have ADD. I'm one of those at times where I need my own time. And in this case, it's probably the office. I come to the office because there's nobody
here.
You
come here to relax, do you?
Yeah. just to focus and not have my two-year-old knock on the study door. But I also appreciate the fact that I spend more time with family.
Yeah.
And I think that from a mental health perspective and what I put back into the organization, there's benefits there. Mm. I can do exercise at home. I can go for a jog. I don't have to worry about, you know, traveling to work. So my long answer is yes and no. I think you also take for granted how important it is to have human interaction. Mm. Mm. So Tuma and I never saw each other for 4 months, and you know, we sit next to each other now, and I stand up and I speak to him, and we get something done quite quickly where previously I have to set up a Teams call or have to try get hold of him. And the only real negative for me is the amount of work that was pushed to an individual during that time. I mean, there were days where I sat from 6 a.m. in the morning to 7, 8 p.m. at night, Teams call after Teams call. And I don't think it's necessarily healthy. So maybe back to our previous question, you're going to get to a hybrid approach. But in some cases, it really does allow for much, much, much better productivity levels.
Yeah. And of course, one of the issues I've discovered, and I'm sure you have too, with video conferencing, is that people put them in your diaries one after another. So there's no time for a break.
No,
so you finish
absolutely.
One team's call and you go straight on to the
next.
All day. The whole day long. Which can't be good for you.
Yeah, not at all.
I agree with you.
I always say it's I never thought about it. That time that it takes for you to walk from maybe your desk to a meeting room.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever it is, a minute.
It's good exercise.
It is so important. It is so important.
Mentally.
Mentally, and physically, mentally. And you add up those simple walks.
Yeah. Because you look out the window, there. You bump into people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Which you don't do when you're sitting at your home office.
At all. And I mean, just another thing that always intrigues me is the senses that you use when you are sitting in front of a laptop. Mm-hmm. And the variation in the use of those senses. So you use your eyes, you use your ears, and almost nothing else, right? And your eyes are pointing in one direction. Mm-hmm. When you are in an office and there are a couple of people around you, your ears are, I mean, the whole room, there's noises around, right? Whereas here, the noise coming from one place the whole time. And then your eyes wander around. I mean, I found that it's
less
a
intense.
Big difference.
It's less intense.
It becomes so intense when you are fixed, when your senses are fixed on one thing the whole day.
Yeah. Although I've noticed the etiquette around these video calls has changed in the space of a few months. I think when everyone started, it was all videos on, everyone was keen and attentive, and this is a new shiny technology, this is quite exciting. Now I find when a meeting starts, everyone's got their video on for 3 minutes, and then as soon as the first speaker starts talking, everyone switches their video off.
And you wonder, what are they doing?
Huh? What are they doing? Doing something else in the background, which maybe helps productivity, I don't know. But Kyle, let's talk a bit about security, because security is a cornerstone of the solution from Dimension Data. I think there's a lot of concern among people, about employees using their own computers at home, for example, that might be quite old, maybe running Windows XP that's no longer supported by Microsoft or some other old operating system, and of course consumer-grade routers, which almost certainly haven't been patched. What does Dimension Data bring to the party from a security perspective, specifically in terms of the solution?
Okay. Patching's an interesting one. I spoke about the connectivity challenge earlier on, the cost of connectivity, mobility services, things like that. One of the things we found early on when chatting to customers was that they weren't patching their environments because they had rules within their organization that data cost was too high on those specific services, like whatever it may be, a 3G dongle or whatever the case. And that was one of the risks that was posed to an organization during lockdown and going forward in the distributed workforce. To a certain extent, we feel we've solved that problem, but that's one of the problems. The complexity that gets introduced in terms of, we spoke about the physical aspects of a person's home, the controls that no longer exist in that environment, older PCs, applications, devices coming onto the network with no control. And our position is, first of all, everything needs to be secure. You have to consider every single component. First component is the end user. Can you educate? Can you ensure that they understand the implications of plugging a USB device into to a corporate asset? Do they understand the risks? Phishing attacks have gone up massively. We've seen targeted phishing attacks at specific industries, at specific people. We saw an unfortunate example of stolen data in one of our financial services organizations this week. Do your users understand? Then more importantly, do you have the capability to predict, understand, respond, and detect a level of risk or security vulnerability in the environment in the context of a distributed workforce, because someone's not at the campus anymore? So the number one thing for us is, can you get the proactive visibility? And we have a number of capabilities that we've included specifically around our security SOAR capability, which is our automation or operation and automation environment. I don't know if you want to add anything else, Sutuma.
So I always say that the hermit will only be harmed by the occasional bug. But we live in a connected world, right? And things happen. And they happen because of random events, just to cause harm. I mean, something could just happen into your business environment randomly. They can happen because of specific non-intentional things. I mean, I could easily have access to some data on a server and innocently try to do something and then harm the environment. But exactly the same thing can happen because of specific intentional events. And that's just the nature of a connected world. What we are doing, I mean, when you work from home or when you now cater for a distributed workforce, I mean, so the attack surface for potential harm, whether again intentional or unintentional, increases quite significantly. I mean, unintentionally, of course, what Carlos said, I mean, as we know, I have my AP, easily share that AP with my kids, my whoever may be in the house, and so on and so forth, right? That represents an expanded attack surface. So the key here is, I mean, secure by design, which is our mantra, is to be secure conscious across all business activities, not just on the IT side. Mm-hmm. Right? So understand kind of the behavior of the employee wherever they're working. Now we're talking about working from home, but it could be when they are mobile, mm-hmm. when they go and work from a kind of a rented office environment. Right? I just want to bring it there. The second thing is that phishing, of course, goes up significantly because the potential attackers know that people are more vulnerable. When I'm at home, I feel that I'm in my own space where I can do whatever I want to do, even though actually logically I'm in an extended office environment. But I still feel I'm under my own kind of rules. Mm-hmm. So I can feel like I can click anything that kind of pops into my onto my email. And the attackers know that. Mm-hmm. So phishing attacks go up, right? So what do we have to do? One of the first thing that we have to do is offer training as part of the package of secure of a smart workplace. The second thing is we recommend, and we have a practice that does that, to do assessments. In the same sense that we do assessments from a formal work environment, we need to be able to tell our clients that around this particular worker or that particular employee or in those kind of environments, this is the nature of this kind of the things that are happening in that environment that represents probably increased risk of harm. The second thing, we also employ zero touch approach. Mm-hmm. We say that because we have heightened risk, we create an environment in our smart virtual workplace for lanes to be very, very tight. If you are in this environment, stick to your lane because we don't want you to then create a path into other environments. And lastly, as a service, again, as a standard service there, we collect logs mm-hmm. from the entire environment, from the laptop at home, from the AP at home, from the network, from the way how the network accesses then the corporate environment. We collect all the logs. Mm-hmm. We collect all the alerts. Then we put them together. We link them up to the threat intelligence feeds around the world. Of course, NTT has access to about 40% of the such feeds globally. And we are able to present to you an analyzed profile mm-hmm. of exactly what it means, whether these logs or these alerts mean something to you based on what's happening around the world. And then that's when we then automatically automate, and you can respond on yourself, or we can then provide further analysis and then respond with our security operations function. But once again, this would be a service that is offered almost that can be offered as a corporate office for the environment. Yeah. What we have done now is to offer it as part of this standard package for our smart virtual world. There is basic security, which kind of involves assessment and training.
Yeah.
And then you can then add these other features there, which makes, remember what we're doing here. What we're saying is that for the risk officer, mm-hmm. all of us are risk officers of organizations. We have our own risk duties. For the risk officer at any level, we want that home environment to give you the same level of resilience, security, to allow for the same level of productivity as you would have gotten if you were in an office environment. Yeah.
To what extent, Kyle, can companies use this technology to monitor what their employees are doing? I think a lot of companies are keen to know that their employees are being productive. Mm. Are you seeing requests from clients asking for solutions that allow them to actually monitor what their staff are doing on a moment-to-moment basis? I imagine there's a point where this becomes too intrusive for the employee.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Being data informed is often a differentiator for many organizations. You speak about making objective or data-based decisions. Remove the subjectivity, whether that's in a corporate environment or in a distributed work environment. I think data is important. Many of the technologies and tools we use inherently today, whether that's email, other productivity apps, other applications, We need visibility into a number of components within the technology stack. So you probably find that you have technologies available to enable the fact that you need visibility into the distributed workforce. So yes, they're out of sight, but they're not out of mind. And as part of the solution, you know, getting the connectivity layer right, the digital aspect is to ensure that the infrastructure is monitored, the security aspects are monitored, but then the application experience is monitored. So are you delivering a quality experience to the employee and your customers? And then are you productive? What are you doing? You can go as far as saying, how many emails are you doing every day? Mm-hmm. You know, how much time are you spending on your device? How many customers are you interacting with? How many internal stakeholders are you interacting with? How many Teams calls are you having? What is the quality of those team calls? And it's an important aspect of the solution. It's what we call productivity monitoring. Mm-hmm. And it allows our customers to be data informed in the distributed new ways of work.
Mm-hmm. I presume the employees should know that this is happening.
It is happening. It is happening, yeah. If they didn't know, they know now.
So I wanted to ask you as well, do you have any plans to extend the smart virtual workplace solution to include so-called endpoint devices,
yeah,
like tablets, phones, laptops?
Yeah, definitely. Phones is not something that we do as an organization today. But as we look at the complexity of distributed work, we look at the commercial models changing. People can't necessarily afford CapEx up front today. They want to start consuming based on consumption-based models or OpEx models. We speak about the smart virtual workplace in relation to the distributed workforce. And that place could be anything. It could be a home. It could be an office. It could be a hospital. You name it. There's a number of places that we deliver these technologies to. So it makes sense for us to look at the ecosystem holistically. And that would include the devices. Probably the first area we'd look at is laptop, you know, other smart devices, and then ultimately the phones. But we will be looking in that direction, and we'll start releasing things quite soon.
Now, how do you adapt the solution for different industries? Say for retail, for financial services. Do you tweak it for each industry, or is it a single solution for each vertical?
When you look at the when you look at the industries in terms of distributed work, there's certain fundamentals that we don't think are going to change. You have to get connectivity right. Yep. You need to decide based on personas and criticality whether there needs to be power continuity available. The security is something we recommend and ultimately one of the most important aspects. I think we've mentioned that a few times. Mm-hmm. But as you start to change the context of a place, whether it's at home or, as I said, an office or a hospital or a school, the components of the technology don't necessarily change that much. You will need power, you need connectivity, you need security, but the scale to which we deliver, yeah, and the way we bundle for specific use cases might change.
Yes.
If you look at a bank, if you look at a branch, we will augment the infrastructure capabilities with additional intelligent capabilities around smart cameras, environmental monitoring. If you look at COVID as an example, can you intelligently monitor? Well, we can assist you in intelligently monitoring how many people are in that location at any point in time, rather than having a person trying to manage people in and out of a door. But we can augment the infrastructure capabilities, as I said, with intelligent capabilities to then start to monitor the outcomes that you're trying to deliver at that place. So in a bank, you walk into the branch, hi Duncan, you've arrived, you know, on your application, how can we help you? Can we direct you in the right place? The queue's too long, can you get a manager to come and help those people? So that's how the context changes, and it's really about the outcome that the organization's trying to deliver at that location. But the technology components are still the same. It's how we bring it together.
You know, Duncan, you know, one of the ways I think about this is just to go back. Every time we say distributed employee, I just want us to go back maybe to the concept of distributed systems and how, where they started, and, you know, if we were to say how have they evolved and kind of what is the framework that kind of helps us to think about distributed computing systems. So think about, businesses. We have employees on the side, and then you have clients on the side, and then you have some kind of organization, like some assets, mm-hmm. including your technology platforms there. And these platforms here are platforms that allow the two parties here to kind of interact, to kind of distribute value. Now, a normal environment without distributed worker and maybe even a distributed in different industries, a distributed client. The client physically comes into an environment to go and purchase something, and the employee physically in the morning go to another environment to go there. So mm-hmm. this system here is the old non-distributed system, right? It's fixed, right? Now all of a sudden you can start saying, I can take a bit of the employee and distribute them outside, mm-hmm. either at home or at a microsite, right? Or I can take my client doesn't have to come to a physical location. They can interact with the employees in a distributed location. It could be a branch, a smaller branch, which would be represent a microsite, or even in a non-physical kind of manner, right? Now, if you think about the old digital systems, as you start distributing these things, you start making capabilities, the work capabilities available almost on the fly, on a consumption model, in a bestable model, right? So you start having certain kind of concepts that come from the new age mm-hmm. methods of distributed access to computing resources applied to access to kind of a business resources to enable these two parties to interact in a very, very kind of nimble and agile way. So in certain industries, for example, you should be able to best out, you know what the terms I'm using? You should be able to best out access to human resources on the fly, irrespective of where the employees is. Mm-hmm. So you put employees, certain people on standby, mm-hmm. They are not physically at work. And if, for example, there is a bit of load from the client side, there is a system, whether it's collaboration, whatever the case may be, that may trigger somebody to say, look, we need you to be at work. Mm-hmm. Does it matter where you are? With smart virtual workplace, it doesn't really matter where you are. Mm-hmm. You are on standby. Mm-hmm. You could be at home. You could have gone to an environment. So there's rigors here, for example, right? You could be in an environment where you should be 5 minutes away mm-hmm. from a location where you could be an effective employee, right? So you can control your kind of work environment on standby, but you are still available to work, right?
And in theory, you could be anywhere.
You could be anywhere. Now, now you're starting to talk about employees available on demand, on an OPEX model, mm-hmm. bestable, and those kind of things. So the concept of a distributed kind of business system mm-hmm. becomes a very powerful concept. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, I can apply it in CX and EX. Mm-hmm. In hospitality, I can apply it to say, I've been using different mechanisms, and I mean privacy and so on and so forth provided. I can use exactly the same methods of kind of a bestable access to business systems, using information and data to say, here's my environment in the kind of in the hospitality environment. Maybe I should pop up a certain kind of activity to allow certain clients to kind of move into that environment. I could easily do that in retail, mm-hmm. And I mean almost create almost promotions on the fly, and create ability for things goods to be delivered kind of on the fly. So I mix my bricks and mortar business together with my kind of online business, almost in manufacturing, in transport, and so on and so forth. So what you're saying is that it's from a work enterprise, and so if you now you stack up this thing and say, we're talking about employees today, right? And from a structure point of view, that's kind of your enterprise services. But that's a kind of a sub industry. Now you can go into other industries, healthcare, right? Now, healthcare is a very interesting one. Education is a very interesting one. Imagine bestable access to healthcare resources, mm-hmm. yeah. where I could be anywhere as a patient, mm-hmm. the doctors could be anywhere, but they could be part of our smart virtual places environment. Remember, we have designed it. It's not random. Mm-hmm. It's not randomly saying that, okay, fine, somebody, I'm on call, and therefore I'm going to go onto my cell phone and go and kind of be on call in whatever protocol allows me to. Mm-hmm. It's designed, it's secure, and it is applicable to that business environment. In education, we could also have bestable kind of services as well. So, I mean, I think for me, that's what the new norm is. Mm-hmm. It is about flexibility, and it's about ability to have access to business resources on the flight in a secure way.
We are almost out of time, gentlemen, but I think let me squeeze in one final question. Let me ask it to you, Satumwa, but Kyle, feel free to come in. Mm. What successful implementations have you had so far with Smart Virtual Workspace, and what have some of the key lessons learned been?
Yeah, I mean, I'll let Kyle answer the rest of it. So we have, in fact, he'll probably give you a much fuller answer there. Mm-hmm. We do have a very, very successful implementation. I mean, a couple of them, and the one that resonates me a lot is in the financial services, where I mean, you kind of intimated earlier that we would it work because they were able to kind of continue providing services fairly quickly when the first lockdown started. It's the smart virtual workplace represents a fundamental tool. Not to a technology strategy, not even to a digital transformation strategy, to a business strategy. Right? And I think Kyle has been very, very close to that environment.
We're deploying to a number of clients and industries, and very successfully, I think, in the short term. There's a few perspectives that I'd like to speak about in, I guess, what our learnings have been. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in terms of the deployment of the technology. In our mind, that's the easy component. Once you decide you want to do it, it's really about scale and delivering the quality that we need to our customers. But we're seeing a massive uptick or demand from specific industries, financial services being one, because I think their business model is largely moving towards digital. And that's what we're seeing. The most successful banks are becoming digital banks. So this distributed workforce works for them. As long as you have the technology that can join the channels at different times and a customer can effectively move through your organization, I think it works quite well. Professional services, because their business models in many cases is a bill by hour, maybe very similar to a GP or a doctor. Mm-hmm. And then the productivity question goes out the window, because if you're not working, if you're not discussing, chatting to a customer, you're not being billed. So we're seeing demand for distributed solutions in the professional services space. And then I guess inherent into both of those industries, but I'll call it out separately, is contact centers. You know, can we take the contact center to people rather than taking people to the contact center? Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it. We've seen a number of customers say that the client experience or the customer experience during this the lockdown was effective. It was good enough. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, more cost-effective. So rather than speaking about the deployments, I want to say that that's where we're seeing the demand. But again, coming from a client perspective, and maybe what we recommend the clients to do, is to look at this as a long-term strategic decision around what you're going to do for your organization in terms of what are your organizational objectives, and ultimately, how could this help you achieve those? What are the workforce considerations around the things that you do in the industry that you're in? And what do you need to deliver to your customers? And that will start to shape the decisions you make around distributed work and the new normal. Mm-hmm. The benefits, definitely financial. IT benefits and reduction in cost. In some cases, there's additional investments in other areas. And technology is the solution. So I don't think people necessarily need to look at that as the cost driver. But massive financial benefit. There's benefit and efficiency around your carbon footprint, your real estate size, what your overall real estate strategy should be. And then some of the softer benefits that we've spoken about. What does it mean for work-life balance? Mm, yeah. You know, what does it mean for productivity? And when customers look at this, the one example, we're working with a very innovative client who's looking at this holistically and have been quite quick to move. In terms of looking at the total cost of ownership, looking at the socio-economic benefits, looking at employee benefits, and looking at how it enhances their ability to respond to customers from a digital perspective. And it will transform your organization, transform your business model, transform your cost structure, and in my mind, make you more competitive. many of the things we've spoken about today. But those are things I think I've really learned outside of just deploying the technology.
Gentlemen, thank you for a fascinating discussion.
Thank you.
Kyle Stanton is Dimension Data's Intelligent Infrastructure Executive, and Dr. Setumo Mohapi is the company's Chief Go-to-Market Officer. Thank you so much for making the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Thank you. Thank you.